Jack leaned against the sandbags that surrounded him on all sides and tried to catch his breath. The wound in his shoulder had settled down into a constant dull ache. The pain was nothing he couldn't handle, but there was something else wrong with his body. His skin was wet and clammy, and his heart seemed to be beating triple fast. The world was spinning slowly to the left. Jack squeezed his eyes closed and shook his head, hoping to shake away the demons that were haunting his body. He could barely stand up straight, and all he wanted to do was lie on the ground and fold himself up into a ball, like a child. But he couldn't do that. He had a job to do. So Jack planted his boots in the dirt, steadied himself against the sandbags, and resumed his watch. Satisfied that Doc had sent the sick man off on a goose chase, Ryan returned to the wag where JB was still trying out keys.
Any luck?
Some fit, but they don't turn.
As if on cue, the latest key he tried slid easily into the ignition. JB looked hopeful a moment, but then the key wouldn't turn.
Keep trying. Oleander, are there any weapons stored here? Anything we can use?
There are some fuel tanks stored at that end of the barn. Some tools.
Show me.
She led him to the far corner of the barn, where red metal and plastic cans were lined up against the wall, next to a workbench covered with tools, some handmade, others pre-dark. Ryan marveled at the selection of screwdrivers, wrenches, pliers, and other tools he didn't even know the names of, or what they could be used for. If they had the time, Ryan would have had JB look over the tools to see if there was anything he could use and that was light enough to carry, but there was no time. He moved to the fuel cans and opened up a few of them. They all contained some sort of alcohol-based fuel that was nothing like what was in the tanks of the large wag. They couldn't use any of it to extend the vehicle's range, but it would still come in handy.
Help me carry these to the wag.
Ryan grabbed the two heaviest cans he could find and carried them back to the wag. Eleander followed with a pair of slightly smaller plastic cans. When they reached the wag, Ryan looked for a way to open the large steel door at the back of the wag's box, but the big flap wouldn't budge.
Won't open unless the box is raised, and I can't raise it unless the engine's running.
Ryan nodded, pleased to know that no one would be able to open the rear door to get at them, but unsure how he was going to get them up into the big steel box. A moment later, he climbed up into the box and reached down, gesturing to Eleander to lift the cans up to him as best she could. She struggled with the heaviest cans, but managed to get them high enough for Ryan to grab hold of them and haul them into the box. When he had all four cans inside with him, he turned his attention to JB.
How many more keys are there?
Three left. Two left. Last one.
Ryan took a breath.
Fits. So far, so good. Turns, too.
But the wag's engine didn't rumble to life. Ryan climbed down from the box.
What's wrong?
Could be anything. Dead battery, fuel starvation, fuel flooding, bad wiring, anything.
You've got 5 minutes. If you can't get it going, we walk out of this ville on foot.
JB shook his head as if he didn't like the alternative, and then began scanning the instruments and switches without a word. Ryan climbed down off the wag and kept watch on the door to the barn. A black plume of smoke erupted from the exhaust behind the cab, and the inside of the barn suddenly grew a bit darker.
Needed to flick one of these switches to turn it on.
JB smiled, obviously appreciative of the ingenuity of the Baron's mechanics.
All right then, let's move.
Baron Robards led a group of Sekhmen into the Baron's residence. In pre-dark days, it had been an apartment building with 28 units spread over 3 floors. Over the years, the Baron had spent a small fortune converting the top 2 floors of the building into a single residence, leaving the rest of the units for his staff, friends, Sekhmen, and supplies.
We'll do it floor by floor. I want every exit on the ground covered by 2 men. A team of 4 will go up each stairwell, with 2 on each team searching the floor, and then teaming up with the 2 at the other end of the building. I don't want the stairs left unattended for a moment. The only way out for these bastards is going to be to jump off the roof or fall off of it dead. Understand?
There were mumbles and mutters from the assembled Sekhmen, and none of them seemed too excited about running into the building after a group of deadly outlanders. Robards had known that giving members of the Sek Force access to the Ville's drugs had been a dangerous step, but it had been a calculated risk on his part, and so far it seemed as if it had paid off. The Sek Force had been compromised, but their allegiance to Robards was already secured, and Baron Demand had quickly been forgotten. However, the Sec Force had become undisciplined and unmotivated in the past months, and judging by the looks on the men's faces, they really didn't care if the Outlanders were caught or not.
A week off for anyone who chose an Outlander, and a month's worth of dream to the one who chose the most of the scum!
That seemed to bring them back to life. Even the Sec men who weren't hooked on Dream knew the value of what was being offered.
I'll lead the north stairwell. Grice, you take the south stairs. We'll start in the basement.
The man named Grice nodded.
The rest of you, watch the ground floor and the roof in case they show up on top of the building.
The Sec men broke up into three groups.
I'm coming with you, Robards.
I don't need you, Baroness.
Baroness Lashini smiled as she shook her head.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. But I'm not coming with you to find the Outlanders. With the deal we made, I'm coming along to protect my interests. Keep you from getting chilled.
Baron Robards shrugged in apathy, then turned away and headed into the building without another word.